morning, everyone. This week has been crazy busy. How many of you were here for our first fundraiser since COVID? Yay! Yeah, that was pretty awesome. Weren't the drawings and the silent auction items, they were pretty great, weren't they? Now, if you've been coming over the last few weeks, you know that we're basing our messages this month on the Virtues Project. That's the program that we teach at Barnhart. And I have a deck of cards. They're on the front pew, and you'll get a look at those later. But I have these cards which correspond to each of the virtues that we teach. And each week this month, I'm asking one of y'all to volunteer, and you draw a random card from the deck, and that is the virtue we'll be speaking on the following week. Okay? Last week, as I mentioned, it was caring, and it ended up being a big deal when we unpacked it all. This week was tough, and I said it out loud when our dear friend pulled it off, and I went, assertiveness. Oh boy. Assertiveness is a tough one, right? It's so tough that when the powers that be at Barnhart put together their list of the virtues that they'll be talking about each week for their calendar, they left assertiveness off the list. How many of you can think of somebody whose brand of assertiveness can seem kind of confrontational? Maybe a little reactive? I can think of a few people I've encountered who not only look for opportunities to voice their offense, but who appear to actively do things to lure unsuspecting people into confrontation, just so they can point out their errors or their perceived weaknesses or their ignorance in making assumptions. And they say they're being assertive. And my kids have told me that in youthful circles, this antagonistic, offense-seeking brand of supposed assertiveness is gaining more and more momentum in younger and younger demographics. And this perfectly explains why Barnhart chose to leave this one off their list. Because yes, the Virtues Project does provide these little cards. And when I'm talking to the kids, I call them cheat cards. So they know that it's an overview. And then I dig in a little deeper. But if a teacher, or in my case, a minister, decides to venture outside of the material on this card, things could get a little dicey. Depending on the viewpoint of each person that's leading, things could get a little rough. I mean, if one of the new breed of aspiring, permanently offended, and outspoken people got hold of this card and found a nearby soapbox to step on, it could really tip the development of young minds off the axis into destructive behavior, couldn't it? And here is where I take you on a little bird walk, a wee tangent, because please remember, I cannot stress this enough, I was a little exhausted when I sat down to write this. And if, I know some of you out there are writers, Maggie, okay, you can attest to this, I'm sure. When you're tired, stuff slips into your mind and out on the page with very little editing or screening or filter. So case in point, when I typed out the description for this new and seemingly growing social demographic, permanently offended and outspoken people, I realized that the acronym is POOP. From today onward, when I encounter one of these people out in the wild, I will never again think of them as rude or ignorant or confrontational or any of the other qualities one would associate with that type of behavior. I will instead observe that they've got a poopy attitude. They're flinging poop. They're just big old duty heads. And I will smile, which of course they'll take offense to, which will make me giggle. Which will, you see where I'm going with this, right? Right? And that in and of itself is kind of where I'm going with my approach to the virtue of assertiveness. When we can stop being poopy and we can take joy in the actions of poopy people, laughing because we know their secret code name, the world around us becomes more joyful. You probably don't see where I'm headed yet, but stay with me. Let's look to the wordsmiths for a little clarification here. And the Google results were a little surprising on this. They definitely offered clarity about why some folks consider themselves to be assertive. Seems so poopy. This is from Oxford Languages. Assertiveness is a noun. It is confident and forceful behavior. That is definitely not a message I want to give the kids. Hey kids, let's all try our best to be confident and forceful. No, that's not going to do it all, will it? Okay, so how about this? From Merriam-Webster, assertiveness means disposed to or characterized by bold or confident statements or behavior. That's a little better, but I can still see how some folks might take bold statements and behavior as meaning aggressive or confrontational. And again, that won't do. That's not what we want to instill in our young people, and it's most definitely not what I am comfortable teaching in our talks. So I kept digging. And I found different variations of the word and plugged those in, assertive, assert, and that's where I found it. According to Merriam-Webster, assert implies stating confidently without need for proof or regard for evidence. And although many of the definitions for the various forms of the word spiraled into negative territories, I clung to this bit. When we are being assertive, we are stating our belief, or for our purposes today, we can say stating our truth, right? Without the need for proof or regard for evidence. And that's the key here. When we are speaking up and we are using our voice or behavior to express our beliefs, our truths, even though we may not have any way to prove the reason we believe it, we're doing something really powerful. And why is that powerful? Because when we know it to be true and we state it, it must be. Form follows word. And I know I use this frequently to make sense of things. The first three sentences of the gospel according to John are, in the beginning was the word, and the word was with God, and the word was God. It was with God in the beginning, through God all things were made, and without God nothing was made that has been made. In the beginning was God and God's word, not God and a bunch of other stuff that God used to make us and everything else in the universe. Without God, nothing was made that has been made. Everything that exists, without exception, was made from God, by God. So all that is in fact made of God, including all of us. And that is what makes our belief and our word so powerful and so important. From page 283 of The Science of Mind by Ernest Holmes, he says, faith is a mental assertion elevated to the plane of realization. It is beyond the mere quibbling or mumbling of words, for it identifies itself with reality in such a manner that reality becomes real to the believer. The invisible becomes visible to the mind and the unseen real. There it is. In the Bible, it is said in several ways, most of which we have used over the last couple of months. But again, from the Gospel according to Mark, chapter 11, verses 22 and 23, Jesus answered, truly, I tell you, if anyone says to this mountain, go and throw yourself into the sea, and does not doubt it in their heart, but believes what they say will happen, it will be done for them. Or from Matthew's perspective, we looked at this last week, we've looked at it in April. Chapter 17, verse 20, he replied, because you have so little faith. Truly I tell you, if you have faith as small as a mustard seed, you can say to this mountain, move from here to there, and it will move. Nothing will be impossible for you. And if you were here for our Easter service, you heard a few other passages of the Bible which state exactly the same fundamental truth, which was taught and demonstrated by Jesus himself. What you believe becomes your experience. Thoughts are things. So when you are practicing assertiveness in a positive way, in a way that will completely reshape things, your life and your experiences and the world around you, you are stating the truth that you would like to experience, knowing that it will be. Okay, so let's look at a fictitious but relatable example of what most folks consider being assertive and what the outcome is. You're in line at everyone's favorite late night superstore. You know the one with the walls and the marts. Yep, and you have sussed out all the best bargains on the clearance racks, because that's what we do, right? That is what we go to the walls and the marts for. And you're in line there, and a couple of people ahead of you in that line is a gentleman whose gestures and vocal volume are beginning to express that he's not happy. And because people watching is a favorite pastime in the Walmart, you and the folks around you hone in on the drama, right? You're anticipating yet another scintillating adventures in retail story that you can tell your friends. Now, from what you gather, the man is asserting that he plucked one of the items he was trying to purchase from a heavily discounted shelf. But when the young cashier scans the barcode, it wasn't the price he expected. The clearly flustered cashier is trying to enter the barcode information in all different ways, hoping for a result which will provide that expected price and stop this man from getting more upset. But there doesn't seem to be a difference in the price, no matter how the SKU code is entered. And here's where the drama starts getting juicy. To the cashier's peril, they posit that perhaps the item was placed on the heavily discounted shelf by mistake, that some other customer set it there and he just happened to pick it up, that it was all a big understanding. Oh my. We can guess where this might be heading. This man feels insulted on a variety of levels. He asks if the cashier thinks he's stupid and doesn't know how to tell the difference between the product name on the box and the product name on the shelf, and that he can't understand how a price tag works. He declares that both the shelf and the box had the same information, then demanded respect. Now, as this whole scene is playing out, the volume and the pitch of this man's voice is growing steadily louder and louder and more high-pitched, and that cashier is stuttering and turning red and beginning to tremble a little bit. And as the cashier continues to apologize, explaining over and over that it's not in their power to change the price, the man becomes more agitated. And finally, he says those words that we hear in so many of these instances. Any of you see it coming? I want to speak with your manager, right? So the manager comes over, and the cashier begins to explain the situation, and the man butts right in, and he says, I got this item from the clearance shelf. It was marked 70% off, and the shelf description and the box matched. This cashier treated me like I'm too dumb to read labels and like I'm a liar, like I'm making the whole thing up. I have never been treated so badly. I am a regular customer here. I won't stand for being treated this way. You should have more respect for people like me. We're the reason you have a job. Wow. Now let's re-examine those definitions from earlier. Oxford Languages says assertiveness is confident and forceful behavior. We can check that box, right? This man is absolutely confident and absolutely forceful. Now, from Merriam-Webster, again, assertiveness means disposed to or characterized by bold or confident statements and behavior. Another checked box, right? And if we revisit, we're going to look at this card from the Virtues Pack. Okay, assertiveness. It says, you know what you stand for and what you won't stand for. You expect respect. He checks those boxes off in a real big way, doesn't he? He expressed those right out loud, almost verbatim, didn't he? Meanwhile, standing nearby, you notice that that poor cashier, whose chin is now quivering and whose eyes are starting to tear up, is about to crumble. And the manager tells the poor young soul to go take a break and takes over. And to sum up the rest, the guy ultimately leaves the store fuming. Now, while that whole scene might have filled your chisme meter, right? That's your gossip, y'all. That is gossip in Spanish. Did it do anything productive? Yeah. It produced a wide-eyed crowd of onlookers. It produced a huge scene, a puffed-up, angry customer, a terrified store employee, and a very frustrated manager. Did the man get the discount? No. Of course not. Not in this case. But consider this alternative version of the story. When the cashier initially scans it and the full, not discounted price appears, the man politely explains that he'd gotten it from the clearance shelf and asked the cashier to scan it again. Nope. Same price. And again, they scan. No change. And so, rather than even entertaining the idea of getting upset, the man says something along the lines of, "Well, darn, don't worry about it. I'll come back and buy it when it goes on sale." Now, I know that the people watchers in us won't be nearly as invested in the lack of public display here, but there's an important ending to this story. The man comes back a few days later to discover that not only was the item on sale, the price was even lower than he originally believed it would be. He confidently stated that he'd be back to buy it when it was on sale, even though there was no evidence that it would be going on sale anytime in the near future. He stated his truth, and not only did it appear, but it appeared sooner and was better than he imagined. Or we could say he believed, then asserted that it would be, and so it was. If you go spelunking in the Googleverse for other real-world examples which support this practice, you'll easily find that there are millions, literal millions of stories that prove that belief becomes reality, that what you assert becomes your experience. And I did spelunk on this topic. That is what I call it, because it's a deep dive into a cave, right? You're spelunking in there. And I found that my tired mind and itty-bitty attention span quickly found themselves dizzy. So I turned to what has become my tried and true source, my bookshelves at home. And I did what I do with those bookshelves at home. I walked over and I pulled out whichever book spoke to me, and I flipped to a random page. And there's this wonderful book called Five Gifts for an Abundant Life by Diane Harmony. And on page 43, she quotes Ernest Holmes. "One of the most important things for us to remember is that we are always causing something to be created for us, and that whatever cause we have set in motion must produce some kind of effect. Are we producing the effects we should experience? The creative process will go on willy-nilly. We cannot beat nature at her own games, for we are some part of the game she is playing. Shall the result in our lives be a comedy or tragedy? We are given the will to decide the issue. We should carefully consider whether we are willing to experience the results of our thoughts." Pause right there. We should consider whether we are willing to experience the results of our thoughts. Do you remember what we said a couple weeks ago from the judgment detox? "I forgive this thought and choose another." Yeah, you can change that. Now, moving on. He says, after we should carefully consider whether we're willing to experience the results of our thoughts, says there should never be any hurt in them for ourselves or for anyone else. We may be sure that if there is hurt for others, there must also be hurt for ourselves. As we sow, so must we reap. But here is no real limitation, for the creative life wishes us to have all that we can use. If we keep our thought fixed upon the idea that this energy, which is also intelligence, is now taking the form of some desire in our lives, then it will begin to take this form. If we change the desire, then it will change the form. Therefore, there must be a definite purpose in our imagination. We are so one with the whole that what is true of it is also true of us. We are one with the unmanifest substance whose business it is to forever take form. And we are one with the law which gives form. The entire order is one of spontaneous being and spontaneous manifestation. The law follows the word as the word follows the desire. The desire arises from the necessity of the universe to become self-expressed. Could it really be that simple? I mean, that was a lot of words, but it's a simple concept, right? Yes. Yes. It can be that simple. So says almost every author of every book in our whole bookstore in varying words. You feel the feels, then you think the thought, then you say the word, and divine law must follow through to self-expression. The thought becomes the word, becomes the thing. There are no exceptions. In a book called The Tao Te Ching, A New Approach, Backwards Down the Path, by Jerry O. Dalton on page 53, he's referencing verse 26 of the Tao. The heavy is the foundation of the light. The still is the master of movement. Therefore, a gentleman travels all day without losing sight of his baggage. When surrounded by the distractions of a hostel, he remains calm and detached. How then can the Lord of 10,000 chariots act foolishly in public? To act foolishly is to lose one's foundation. To be agitated is to lose one's self-mastery. Everything of substance has a heavy foundation. All activity has its root in still planning. Thus, sages must go forth, but they never will lose sight of their foundation. Even when surrounded by noise and distractions, they remain calm and detached. How can our leaders act foolishly before the public eye? To do so is to lose one's basis. To be agitated is to show lack of self-mastery. Calm stillness allows one to focus on Tao process. Focus leads to understanding. Understanding leads to enlightenment. Enlightenment allows one to become a leader because he or she has a sound basis. And at the bottom of this is an exercise, and this is practical. He says, today, when you face a difficult problem or situation, remember this. As you work through the difficulty, remember that a moment of stillness will assure correct action. So before you launch into activity, stop. Calm yourself. And if you are emotionally involved in the situation, step back into detachment. Focus on the process, which is the foundation of the activities and events before you. Don't be agitated if the solution or correct action doesn't come immediately. Create a small bubble of calm stillness around you, and a sound basis for your actions will surface in your mind. That's cool, right? Create a small bubble of calm stillness. I love what that does in my mind. Now, for clarity, the Tao is what we call God, or divine law, or the universe, or any of the other names that we use to describe our higher power. The Tao is all that is. And as we strive to become more harmonious with all that is, we enter into the Tao. That is the crux of Lao Tzu's Tao Te Ching. When we don't allow ourselves to engage or react in ways which others expect, it opens others' eyes to new possibilities. It helps others see that counterforce is unnecessary when you choose to see that another person's words or behavior have only the impact you choose to accept within the framework of your life. In other words, when you see that there is no force against you other than that which you accept as true, you begin to realize that there is no necessary countermeasure. It all becomes one beautiful flow, and claiming your place within that flow effortlessly invites others to do the same. One by one, humanity is changed. And as you move along in that new harmonious pathway, you find that you can assert the truth of your heart into words, whether or not there is any proof of the truth. Any proof that your word is real, and you can know that it will come to be. Call it divine law, call it the universe, call it whatever you want, but know that it is real. If you want to hear some proof, talk to that lady back there. Frances, I'm so sorry to do this to you. That lady back there is Frances Comer, and she is a master at this kind of assertiveness. And if you don't believe me, ask her to tell you the story about the crows and the mirror that she found for them, or about her brand new walker. Those were thoughts. She thunk them. And her shoes, they were thoughts. And she thunk them, and God delivered. That simply. She is the master. If we assert that our lives are filled with only peace and love and joy and success, that everything we experience is good, we find that everything is good. We find that it's greater than we'd even begun to imagine because we got out of the way and we let God give to us without limit. If we all begin to assert that everyone in the world recognizes our unity, that we are all one with each other and with God, if we begin to assert the good in our world outweighs the bad, and it truly does, if we begin to assert that in all that we do, knowing that the good is eradicating all of that violence and all of that disharmony, the violence and disharmony will be eradicated. There is no other alternative. What we believe becomes real. As we get out of the way, knowing that it's coming in its own time, manifesting in its own way, and we trust the law of cause and effect, we see it in reality. That is absolute law. Remember what we learned about virtues from Oxford Language last week. In traditional Christian angelology, the study of angels, who knew? A virtue is the seventh highest order of the ninefold celestial hierarchy. Every one of these virtues we're talking about, every single one of them, holds one of the most precious keys to the kingdom. The seventh most important set of keys out of only nine. And I want to leave you with this from 1 Minute Wisdom by Anthony DeMello on page 65. The master demanded seriousness of purpose from those who sought discipleship. But he chided his disciples when they strained themselves in spiritual endeavor. What he proposed was lighthearted seriousness, or serious lightheartedness, like that of a sportsman in a game or an actor in a play, and much, much patience. Forced flowers have no fragrance, he would say. Forced fruit will lose its taste. Use the key of assertiveness to turn your desire into word. And as you speak that word, know without one teeny tiny iota that it will be, and it will. It's not a complicated dance which can only be followed by the most learned dancers. It's just a breath, a single breath. It's something which happens within our bodies without a thought of needing air. It is a need which is met effortlessly, and that's exactly how it works with God. Feel the yearning, assert the word, and then let it be. Thank you.